Measuring Compassion, Neonatal Nurses, Nursing Faculty Squabbles, and A Look at Pressure Ulcers. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's episode of the show. If you are a brand new listener to The Nursing Show, I want to welcome you officially to the show and urge you to head over to nursingshow.com and check out all of the information available over there. There are articles that are posted throughout the week. Of course, the links for each episode's show notes are available there all over at nursingshow.com. And also urge you to sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter. You can get all of the links from each week's episode sent to you every time it gets posted by email. Just sign up for the email newsletter over at nursingshow.com and get all of these links sent right to you. And welcome to the show. Of course, for all of you long-term listeners to The Nursing Show, I want to thank you again for sticking around for all of your contributions, suggestions, and comments. These are all greatly appreciated and are really what makes The Nursing Show a great community effort. So keep those comments and suggestions and, yes, corrections coming in so that we can provide the best possible information to you, The Nursing Show listeners. You can get in touch with me here at The Nursing Show by way of email at comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also leave comments over on The Nursing Show blog. There are links at the bottom of the pages there to leave a comment. Go ahead and do so. I will approve the comments individually so we don't get the blog spammed, but it's a great way for you to provide links back to your own authoritative resources and provide more information still for the Nursing Show community. And we can all do that by working together. So get in touch with me either by email or by comments over at the blog page. Our friend Tim Pruin from Australia sent in some information this past week on hydrofluoric acid burns, and this is in response to some of the things that were talked about last week by Lisa Boos, talking about household cleaner poisonings and dealing with those particular emergencies. So I thought I would include a link in the show notes this week to some of the information that Tim was able to provide us. There's a PDF download link from the Australian Nursing Association on hydrofluoric acid burns, and you'll find more information in the show notes about that. I'm going to go ahead and lead off this week's news items with a couple of stories from the UK. The first looks at an initiative there that was brought forward in a recent keynote speech to increase the ability to measure quality of care, and that includes the quality of nursing care. One of the primary factors will be measuring the quality of compassionate care, or the level of compassion in nursing care. Now, this is in consultation with nurses at the Royal College of Nursing's National Congress. They announced recently that they would like to see more recognition for nurses and the quality of care that they provide, believing, as I agree, and I think all of us agree, that nurses really provide a very personal level of care and understanding of the patient's personal issues. So nurses provide that personal touch, but how do you measure that? So this initiative by the National Health Service to measure overall quality of care, including the quality of nursing care, I think is a good thing. One statement said, quote, "Nurses across the UK work tirelessly to ensure that patients are treated with dignity, compassion, and sensitivity, aspects of care which are so important but rarely measured," end quote. I can't agree more. Consultation will show that the indicators should focus on three overarching themes: compassionate care, effectiveness of care, and patient safety. Sounds very familiar, sounds a lot like Joint Commission guidelines, and I think that this is something that we should watch closely because I think it's important that we can show our effectiveness to legislators, to administrators, when we can actually measure the quality of that care. I'd really like to hear back from the listeners of The Nursing Show to find out if there are any specific standards used in your facilities or in your regions to gauge the quality of nursing care in your area. What are you doing to measure the quality of care on a personal level? I mean, that's something that we all need to evaluate for every shift and every single patient for whom we care. And so this is something that's good. It provides an overall look, but it's also a good reminder for each one of us to look at the way we deal with every single one of our patients and to adjust appropriately. Something we do all the time, maybe subconsciously, but certainly something that we should occasionally think about in more concrete terms. The next story out of the UK looks at a recent study from Parliament that found a serious shortage in neonatal nurses, or at least nurses qualified to care for neonatal patients. And this follows a 2003 reorganization of the nation's neonatal units into 23 regional neonatal centers. And this seemed to solve some of the issues involved in providing adequate neonatal care, but it did not solve all of the problems. And these 23 regional units still have serious shortages in staffing. And I think this just points out that there is a worldwide problem with having adequate nursing coverage on units. And I think it also looks at the fact that there are many specialized areas of care that have shortages. Yes, we have a shortage in nursing, but that applies across the spectrum. And we will see shortages in qualified specialized nursing areas in all areas. I suspect that if they were to expand their study, they would find shortages in maternity nursing, shortages in pediatric nursing, shortages in specialized geriatric care. All the way across the spectrum, there is a shortage of nurses. Of course, the solution to any shortage in the nursing workforce starts with hiring and training new nurses and goes to looking at how we are training those new nurses. This brings me back to a story here in the United States where a University of Texas branch at Galveston is running into some issues because of some discontent among the faculty in the nursing school there. Apparently, this stems from the firing of a very popular administrator and the change from an academic approach to management of the nursing program to a business and income-focused approach where they have decreased the number of nursing faculty, increased the workload, and are still turning away students in need of education. A petition from 70% of the nursing faculty at this particular nursing school actually called the administration oppressive in their handling of academic matters and said that they had jettisoned the traditional academic system, ensuring academic freedom, and had adopted a corporate model emphasizing income and loyalty. Many of the members refused to sign because they feared retaliation from the administration. One recently retired faculty member there upheld the thoughts behind the petition, saying that the faculty there feel that they are undervalued and are not worth anything in the light of the administration's stance. The faculty petition included a statement saying, quote, "During a time of severe nursing faculty shortages, we cannot afford to lose qualified, experienced people," end quote. I can't agree with this more. I have to say that in a time of increasing nursing shortages worldwide, we probably could make an argument that the most important nurses out there right now are those that are involved in any way in educating new nurses. And this includes those who work in a part-time capacity, perhaps as a clinical preceptor, or those who work as full-time professors of nursing on the faculty at a college. These people are responsible for the future of nursing. They are going to be the ones that train and set the stage and standard for the nurses for the next 20 to 30 years. And it's important for us to support those nurses and to retain those nurses in the positions so that they can continue their valuable work. So I have to agree that this is something that needs to be looked at, and certainly there's no room for this kind of thing in a university environment where there should be some level of freedom to disagree with the administration. That seems to be a long-standing tradition in many of the colleges that I've attended and been associated with, and I have to certainly think that this is a problem that should be looked at very closely from the University of Texas system. Time for this week's nursing show tip and trick of the week, and I thought I would talk a little bit about bed sores, pressure ulcers, whatever you want to call them. These are a big problem in many areas of nursing, and yet for some of us, depending on the area of specialty that you may have discovered for yourself, you may not have really dealt with bed sores or pressure ulcers very frequently. So it's important, I think, to freshen our memories on these things, because these can be problems for a wide patient population, not just the long-term care patients that we see in nursing home facilities or patients that have long-term surgical issues or paralysis in a home care setting where these are problems dealt with by home care nurses. In fact, according to the pressure ulcer guidelines published by the Agency for Healthcare Policy and Research with the federal government, they found that in some cases, in long-term care facilities, rates as high as 23% of the patients there had pressure ulcers at various stages, and that patients with femoral fractures, patients in critical care settings, and patients with any kind of paralysis or immobility were at greatly increased risk for developing pressure ulcers. So this is something that really spreads across a huge spectrum of the patient care population. I found some really great links, so I urge you to head over to the show notes, because there's just a ton of information out there for you in journals as well as through the federal government for both yourselves, and some good patient education resources, especially for those involved in home care and those that have loved ones that are providing care for them. They can find some good information to educate them on how to recognize and prevent pressure ulcers. Pressure ulcers are those sores that develop when areas of damaged skin and tissue happen as a result of sustained pressure, usually from being in bed or sitting in a wheelchair, and it cuts off circulation to the skin in vulnerable parts of the body, areas where bony prominences are pressing out against the skin. This can happen most frequently in the sacral areas, in the hips and the heels, but also can be found at the shoulder blades and other areas that may be in regular contact with a hard or a resisting surface, even something like a mattress. Without adequate blood flow to these regions, the affected tissue begins to die. The National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Council, a professional organization that actually works with prevention and treatment of pressure ulcers, has defined the following four stages of pressure ulcers. And these are the guidelines you can use when staging a pressure ulcer. Stage one, the least severe stage of pressure ulcers, includes a pressure sore that appears as a persistent area of red skin. It may itch or hurt. It may feel warm and spongy to the touch. In people with dark skin, the mark may appear to have a blue or purple cast, or may have a flaky or ashen look to it. These are superficial stages of pressure ulcers, and if pressure is removed from that area of the body by turning the patient or having them change position, it should go away pretty quickly following the removal of that pressure. The next stage, stage two pressure ulcers, begin to show actual signs of an injury. It becomes an open sore, looking something like a blister or an abrasion. There will be redness to the surrounding tissues, and this is the sign that some skin loss has already occurred, either in the dermis or the epidermis. But this is a sign that skin loss has begun to happen, that this breakdown has begun to occur more severely. However, stage two pressure pressure ulcers can be treated effectively and heal very quickly when recognized and dealt with promptly. Stage 3 pressure ulcers is the time when damage has extended below the level of the dermis into deeper areas of the subcutaneous tissues and becomes looking more like a deep or crater-like wound. And this is much more severe because of the access now to underlying tissues without the protection of the skin. This allows infection to enter the body and can lead to widespread sepsis. Stage 4 pressure ulcers are the most severe and advanced stage, and this is a sign that there is damage to underlying structures, muscle, bone, tendons, joints, all at risk at this point because of the breakdown to circulation in that region. These are extremely difficult situations to heal and often lead to lethal infections, including necrotizing fasciitis and sepsis. So it's important to get ahead of these pressure ulcers and get to them before they reach stage 3 or 4 so that they can be treated and healed effectively. So who's at risk? Well, we talked about some of them already. Patients with any kind of paralysis are at increased risk, not just because of their immobility, but because of their decreased sensation or pain response. They are unable to feel when there is a pain or pressure problem beginning. And so these patients are at increased risk because of their underlying problems. But of course, anyone of advanced age, people as they age, we lose our subcutaneous fat, and that is the cushioning that helps prevent some of this from happening at a younger age. So anyone of advanced age is at increased risk. Residents in a nursing home, patients with any kind of peripheral neuropathy, patients with diabetes are also at increased risk. Anyone who have had recent weight loss or are naturally thin are also at increased risk just simply because, again, the lack of subcutaneous fat that provides some cushioning. People with urinary or fecal incontinence, again, wet skin is going to be more susceptible to breakdown, as well as, of course, fecal matter lying on the skin. It doesn't, you know, our digestive tract doesn't care what meat it digests. So if you put the contents of the digestive tract in contact with the skin anywhere, you're going to begin breakdown much more quickly. Patients with malnutrition, not only because they will develop pressure ulcers more readily, but if they do not have adequate nutrition and enough protein in their diet, they will not be able to rebuild the skin tissue or underlying structures adequately to heal effectively. Also, people with altered mental status, because again, they are unable to adequately recognize changes in their body or be able to effectively communicate when they are in pain. And also smokers, because of course, nicotine decreases the circulation. It causes that constriction of the blood vessels and will decrease circulation to the periphery of the body. So smokers are at increased risk as well. So this is a brief look at pressure ulcers and staging. There's a lot more information out there. I've provided a lot of links in the show notes, and this will get you started. Remember, I provide general information here on the Nursing Show. It's up to you to follow up and provide the additional information adequate and appropriate to your nursing practice. That's going to wrap up another episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show and remind all of you to get back in touch with me with your comments, suggestions, questions, and yes, corrections on this week's episode by emailing me at comments@nursingshow.com. Remember to go over to nursingshow.com and check out the blog there with the articles, as well as the show notes links for this and every other episode. You'll also find the sign-up form for the Nursing Show newsletter, a great way for you to keep in touch with the Nursing Show and get the links from each episode sent directly to your email box every week. Time to close out the show, and I'll wrap up with a song from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This week, a song from Jim's Big Ego called Stress. I think it's appropriate for those of us that have some stressful jobs or times going on right now, as well as dealing with stress and pressure ulcers. So that'll be available for you. Check out the links in the show notes and let Jim know you heard his song here on The Nursing Show. That's going to be it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Pressure, then I sleep too long and I hang around like a bum. I think I'm going nowhere and that makes me nervous. Everybody's out to get me, but I feel alright. Everybody's out to get me, but I feel alright. Everybody's out to get me, but I feel alright. Everybody's thinking about me. It's the little things that get you. It's the little things that get you when you weren't paying attention. It's the little things that get you. It's the little things that get you. It's the little things that get you when you weren't paying attention. I'm trying to cut down on my caffeine consumption. So when I get up, I just have one cup of coffee and I like to have another cup of coffee with my breakfast. And on the way to work, I like to get a cup of coffee. Like the kind of cup of coffee that you get with the donuts. If I never get the donut, I just have the cup of coffee. And when I get to work, I like to have a cup of coffee. Cause I like to have a coffee when I'm talking on the phone. It usually goes cold and I need to get another cup of coffee. And it's lunch and I have an espresso. Back. It's not morning anymore, so I have a Diet Cola and another Diet Cola. But then I'm feeling fine, and I'm feeling pretty sharp, and I'm feeling pretty wired, and I'm getting things done. But right about 2, I get this little tiny migraine. It starts by my eyes, and it moves to the back of my neck, and it moves to the bottom of my spine. But it doesn't get there till 5 or 6 o'clock, which is the end of the day. So I'm fine, so I'm fine, so I'm fine, so I'm fine, so I'm fine. Except when I have to work late, when I have to work late, which I usually do. Addicted to stress, that's the way that I get things done. If I'm not under pressure, then I sleep too long, and I hang around like a bum, and I think I'm going nowhere, and that makes me nervous. Everybody's at the game, but I feel alright. Everybody's at the game, but I feel alright. Everybody's at the game, but I feel alright. Everybody's thinking about me. Hey, how you doing? Looking good. You been working out? Yeah, I can tell. Alright, see you later. Play real hard. I love to steal little things from the grocery store, like a piece of bubble gum, or sometimes I just stick my thumb in a peach and leave it there. I love to work, I love to run, I love to water ski, snowboard, jet ski, skydive, parasail, hang glide, rollerblade, mountain bike, bungee jump. Well, I mean, I'd love to do these things if I ever had the time. I love to work, I love to work, I love to work out after work. I love to spend a little time with this woman I'm seeing, except we never really get all time to spend together, so we call each other up and we talk about work. But what I think I really love is to get up on myself on a little tiny island in the middle of the ocean with just me and a book and a cellular phone and a personal computer in case something came up. And I'd eat, and I'd drink, and I'd run, and I'd sleep, and I wouldn't do nothing except swim all day. So, you know, my beeper doesn't work underwater. Where are the sharks? Where are the sharks? Where are the sharks? And there's this kind of anemone that sticks in your foot, and the poison goes up to your brain, and you die. And say it, please. Say it, please. Actually, I think it'd be really relaxing. Just me by myself in the middle of the ocean. And that's what I really love to do more than anything else. Except I probably hate it. Addicted to stress, that's the way that I get things done. If I'm not under pressure, then I sleep too long. And I hang around like a bum. I think I'm going nowhere and that makes me nervous. Everybody's out there giving me better.